Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
a little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR and 88.3 LPFM around Lake Heights, Illinois. This is Michael Kassler. Guess what? I'm flying solo today. No Dave Sparky Saganaki. He's not with us this morning, but that's all right. Shouts out to Dave. We'll see him hopefully next week. But we do, of course, have Jay Encyclogarmonica. Garmin is going to be on. jgarmin.net is where you can find out more information about him, of course. And also, too, he's going to give us the answer to last week's Mutant Geek Trivia, which I'm excited to hear about. And then following that immediately, you're going to want to stick around today. This is going to be a great show. I'm very excited about this. We've got Reddit co-founder Eric Martin on. And if you've been listening to the show the last several weeks, month or so, you've heard me lose it, I think is the best way to describe it. You've heard me lose it a few times about SOPA and PIPA, and these are the online piracy protection and stop online piracy acts and things like this, and the damage that they can potentially do to the internet in general and companies that use the internet in specific. And he's going to come on. He's an actual expert on this topic. He's been on both sides of the table, and he's got some great information for us. Should be just a fascinating conversation. I cannot wait. I spoke to him briefly just prior to the show here, and I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. Now, if there's time after that, and I'm not going to promise anything this week because I know how difficult, and you know how difficult it is for me to stay on time anyways, but if there's time this week, we will also to go back to our regular routine of having a couple of cool sites of the week, and the podcast-only song of the week this week is going to be a good one, too. It's a one I picked from David Byrne, who I haven't heard much, haven't listened to much of him lately. So that's good stuff coming up. And man, it's been a great week. If you're in the Illinois area, there's almost nothing else to talk about but the weather. I could not believe yesterday. I went out and I ran the day before outside in the start of January. That's crazy. Go global warming. I'm all for it, man. If this means I can get outside and I can pretend I'm a West Coast boy or something, that's great. I was very excited about that. But if you're not in the Illinois area, you're probably not as excited about the weather. I don't know. I guess it's been pretty good out throughout the Midwest. Now there's been a lot of talk lately, of course, about all of the. Okay, I'm going to jump to a completely different subject here. there's been a lot of talk recently about Occupy Wall Street and the 99% and the 1% and all this good stuff. Well, guess what? There's another 1% that we need to be worried about. Apparently, it turns out recently in a study that 1% of all heavy data consumers generate half. That's right, half of all wireless bandwidth traffic. 1% generates half of all of the wireless bandwidth traffic. These are those bandwidth hogs that you hear the carriers referring to, such as AT&T and Sprint, and why they complain that they can't offer the unlimited all-you-can-eat packages anymore because of these heavy consumers, these bandwidth hogs. And I guess it's somewhat validated here by some of the study that was done. This is a mobile advisory company, Arieso, and Ericsson also supported this. And they say that this is due specifically to the increased use of smartphones instead of the feature phones. And then, of course, too, you've got the rise of mobile devices like tablets and e-readers and other things that specifically use the carrier wireless networks, those 3G networks, and now the 4G, and coming soon, the LTE networks. Now, the smartphone usage, and what they mean by feature phone is, of course, just the phone, which you may, you know, still have a couple of those around your house. I don't know. That's a cellular phone that's all that it does is just phone. You know, you can download ringtones or whatever, but not much else. The smartphones, of course, are your iPhones, your Android phones, you know, the new Windows phones that are coming out. And those are the ones that allow you to do a lot of crazy stuff that you used to only be able to do on your computer, such as surf the internet, listen to music, watch videos, etc. And that seems to be what they're thinking is causing this huge, huge amount of bandwidth, particularly the video watching. And in fact, the heaviest mobile broadband hogs, they say, are those that consume videos and surf the web, and that these extreme users were watching videos 40% of the time. And then they were searching the web 20% of the time. The rest of the time was dedicated to social networking, email, and software. 40% of your time watching videos while you've got your tablet or whatever. That just seems crazy to me. Now, I know I spend personally with either my cell phone, my tablet, or my laptop, it's got to be a minimum of 6 to 10 hours a day hooked into this one way or the other. I watch virtually no video on my computer. I have to admit, I'm one of those late adopters for that. I'm not a Netflix sign-upper. I'm not really into the whole YouTube phenomenon. I will go through and look at stuff if I'm looking for a video, or I'll go through to stuff that somebody has told me is interesting, but I have a tough time kind of figuring out who are these people that are spending that degree and that amount of time with the videos. And so it begs the question, you know, given this, that you've got 1% that is really, you know, pushing onto the bandwidth traffic of the carriers, it gives you a little bit of, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say empathy, but at least perhaps a little bit of sympathy to some of these carriers who are trying to provide a service that is good for everyone, all of their consumers, not just to take advantage of the 1% or take, you know, care of the 1%, but to help the other 99% of us that perhaps don't use that degree of bandwidth. And of course, the argument that they make is that those 1% are damaging the user experience for the other 99% because the networks themselves just are not capable of maintaining that level of access. So, you know, it's a tough question. I found it interesting that there is now at least some external third party validation, because most of what we hear, of course, comes straight from the carriers. Now, Ericsson was involved with this. Ericsson is a mobile phone manufacturer, electronics manufacturer, so there may be some vested interest in that. But it, you know, the quick look doesn't have any. You know, it passes the smell test, anyways, at this point. So we'll see how that pays out, and if the carriers such as AT&T and Verizon and so on do use this in order to make some changes in there, in the way that they charge you for your stuff. Now, many of you know, of course, I recently did get a tablet. I recently got a Kindle Touch as well. I upgraded my old Kindle, which was just the regular standard Kindle, to the new Kindle Touch. Couldn't be happier. Very excited about it. My wife loves the tablet. I got the tablet for her. And of course, you know, one of the first articles that comes out here in on CNN Tech, if you go and find other, they're quoting some analysts and saying, what's going to change in 2012? Well, of course, GPS units, iPads, and other tablets are going to be much cheaper in 2012. So thanks for that. I guess, you know, I just dropped a couple hundo extra that I didn't need to, but that's all right. I like getting it soon rather than cheap. I guess that's the decision that we always make. If you do go to CNN.com, though, there is a great article by Amy Guerin who really breaks out how these things are going to change. You know, and you've got discussion about the Kindle Fire, which is a 7-inch tab that is specifically dedicated to the Amazon sort of ecosphere for purchasing. They're also talking about the iPad and the Samsung Galaxy Tab. Now, I got the Samsung Galaxy Tab myself, the 10.1, which is a direct competitor in my mind to the iPad. The specs are very, very similar. The only big difference between the two is that the iPad, of course, is hooked into the old Apple thing, and the Samsung Galaxy Tab is an Android hooked in more with the Google systems. And so that made the difference for us. They're saying, though, even the e-reader is going to go down. And in fact, and this is the most interesting part, this is why I wanted to bring this up, is that it's even possible, she says, that Amazon might start giving away the Kindle, similar in the way that carriers, who we were just talking about, give away their phones, because the money that they make is not on the hardware. That's not the significant portion of cash that comes in for Amazon. The significant portion of what comes into Amazon is, of course, through the media purchases, and that includes your ebooks. And if you've got a Kindle now, that can include your music, that can include a video, all this kind of stuff. And that's where I think we'll get to the point where possibly we should see this. Although I've been saying that this is needed to happen for some time, not from Amazon, but from the newspaper standpoint. New York Times, Chicago Sun, Tribune. Why are these guys not just throwing tablets and e-readers at you with the with the caveat that you have to subscribe to a 2-year subscription to their magazine or to their newspaper? I don't get it. I mean, goodness sakes, you know, this is their easy venue, their easy break into that market, which is very rapidly leaving them in the dust and causing the bankruptcy issues that we've seen here in Chicago and around the country with all of the newspapers. If a single newspaper organization doesn't want to do it themselves, then, you know, create a little consortium and do this and at least try it on a test basis in a couple of cities. I think that they'd be surprised at the rapidity that brings up some traction into people joining and actually subscribing to content again and paying for that content, which is not happening today. Speaking of content that you'd be willing to pay for, I think it's about time that we gave our good friend Jay Garman a call. He's got a lot to talk to us about for the geek trivia we had last week. I know he's got something queued up.
Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Garman. Hey.
How we doing, guys? It's
just guy today. It's just me staring at the wall as usual. It's kind of like being at home, really, for me. I talk. I don't know if anybody's listening, and but I amuse myself, so it's okay. How about yourself? Are you enjoying some of this unseasonably warm weather?
Enjoying may be an overstated term. I'll be helping a friend move later today.
Oh.
So, you know, I'm glad it's not freezing cold while I'm doing that. But I'm not sure lifting boxes of books is really how I want to spend my Saturday.
Aren't you? You're not that much younger than me. Aren't we past that moving age? I thought the moving age was like 18 to 25, and it's like all your buddies are moving or getting married, and you need to help them. There's got to be some age when you just call foul on it and say no more. I'm done with moving people.
Well, it's not as bad as it was in my 20s. I'm 35, so I'm mostly done with that. And the guy I'm helping move is 41, so he's not young either. But the issue is, he has a whole lot of electronics and collectibles that the moving company is not insured for.
Okay.
So this is the pre-move of all the stuff that you don't let the movers move. And
yeah,
that never goes away.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's that is true. That is true. Okay, we'll give him a pass on this one.
Yeah.
It's the
Of course, I get the harrowing job of moving, the giant television down the steps.
You know,
that if it drops, he's out thousands of dollars, and I'm clearly not insured for that.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is that, you get the 30-plus year old guys asking you to help you move their couch, and then it's like, no, that you're old enough, you're an adult now, it's time to pony up a few dollars and just let the movers take care of that. So
Well, and the other part of that is I think all men eventually discover, unless they're just completely math illiterate, is that if you're a decent human being and you buy the guys that you're moving stuff with a meal and you rent a truck like you have to move an actual like adult houseload of things, mm-hmm. you really aren't saving much money against movers. And at the end of the day, everyone you like hates you and you hurt.
Yes.
As opposed to spending like maybe $50 more and they get a point. That goes there. Goes here.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, yeah, and then if something does break, you know, it doesn't also break your friendship as well. So that's,
exactly.
That's a good thing. Well, that's cool. And, you know, and I, although I'm running it down, you know, kudos to you for being there for a buddy. That's always a good thing. Always a good thing. so, you know, I really wanted to get to the geek trivia question of the week this week because it's such a cool one. And I was doing a Horshack last week and going, ooh, cause I knew the answer. I love this question. It's such a bizarre thing and it fits in with the theme of the show today because we're going to be talking to Eric Martin in a few minutes, who's going to talk to us about, SOPA and PIPA and the legalities and the bizarre twists and turns of our legal system and copyright, that this is just such a great question to have for this week. And it was about the mutants and the X-Men and all that. Let's dive into that for a minute.
Well, the United States government has actually ruled on whether or not the X-Men as mutants are human beings, even though they're fictional. If mutants as described in Marvel Comics ever came to life in the real world, and if you get certain Gen Mod food does what all the theorists say it could possibly do, or if we set up a few more nuclear tests, hey, this could happen. there is legal precedent that they aren't human beings. And the reason this came about is because Marvel is cheap. Marvel outsources to Toy Biz, I believe, who used to own them, and a lot of other people. They're the manufacturer of toys based on the likenesses of the X-Men. And it's done overseas, so then they have to be imported. Well, the problem with the Byzantine complexity of U.S. tariff and import law mm-hmm. is that dolls, which are defined as anything that looks like or depicts a human, are taxed at a higher rate than toys that are not dolls, which are anything that isn't a human, robots, cars, anything like that. Dolls are taxed at 12%. Non-dolls are taxed at 6.8%, almost half.
Wow.
So this put Marvel in the position of, we need to go before a U.S. tariff court judge and argue that mutants are not human beings, and therefore toys of mutants are not dolls, and thus we can import them more cheaply. Now, and they won.
I was just going to ask.
Marvel actually got a ruling that mutants are not human beings because
wow.
they have different genetic makeup and are therefore a different species, and thus are not people.
Wow. Now, was there any definition applied to that of saying, you know, if they have to have at least 99.98% human genome before they're not considered human anymore, or was it just a mutants period? How vague was it?
I don't know the specific vagaries, but from what I've been reading around this, they mostly played they're like aliens card. Mm. They may look human-ish, and I think some of the examples they really brought up were like Beast because he has blue fur, and Mystique because she's got blue skin. You know, like yeah. these are clearly not people because they look different kind of thing. So I think that was more of the card they played. They're just not genetically human. These are like aliens and this, that, and the other. To me, this is more an issue of, boy, this law is dumb.
Yeah.
Like, what is so special about dolls that they need double the import rate? Like, is there some, like, are we, like, ticked off about China dolls or something because they're much more valuable? Like, do you not know how valuable a mint condition Optimus Prime Transformer toy in the original box is worth?
I'm sure that if you look into the history, this was probably a codicil of some bigger bill that was buried read and had to do with the, you know, some congressman's brother-in-law who had a doll import export something, you know, and so this got in there somehow. I'm just flabbergasted too and amazed, you know, without having a more specific definition of mutant. You know, I would be concerned that this could be used as a case, you know, a kind of a predecessor case to say, you know what, a child born blind is not human, and so we can do whatever we want to or with them because under this ruling they qualify as a mutant and not as a human and don't have the right to vote, don't, you know, and so on. And so, I mean, basically creating the scenario that the X-Men comics were specifically railing against.
Totally. I mean, this is basically setting up a bizarre backdoor legal precedent that the first telepaths born to human beings are going to be considered non-human and thus, well, I mean, with all the, I don't want to get off on a total rant. I'm going to let your next guest get off on a total rant about the idiocies of a whole lot of current laws and their impact on civil rights. But,
yes,
you know, I really don't think that we want to get off on the wrong foot with the first human beings born with genetically based superpowers. That is not a stand you want to take. If you've seen any science fiction movies, you know that does not end well for those of us that don't have the special powers.
Exactly. And I just keep running around in my head with, you know, with any of the X-Men movies or any of the X-Men comic, you know, and it's reasonably, it fits into the same canon. And it's just that, you know, irony, thy face is Congress. It's just how can you as a legislator, either you know nothing or it's really mind-boggling. And you're right, we're gonna have a lot of ranting going on here in just a couple of minutes with Eric Martin too, I'm sure. But this was just astonishing to me. I could easily go on for another 15 minutes about this because it's great. I love it that you ripped this one from the headlines to give us this one this week, because if people don't know about it, they should know about it and realize how absolutely insane things are getting in our government.
And it had been for a while. I just want to send a shout out to a great online comic called Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, which is very smart and very irreverent and occasionally not safe for work. But a while back, they had a comic where he had a quantum physicist going, so in quantum physics, there's a state called true and a state called false, and then a superposition that is both true and false, a true false. Isn't that bizarre? And the next panel is, really? I don't get why this is so difficult. And the caption is, politicians make great quantum physicists.
That's awesome. Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal. I don't think I've run across that one. I'll have to look that up. That sounds perfect. Perfect. So what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, 2012. It is 2012, and I'm going to do a little calendar base now since we're in the new year. This is a leap year. And the funny thing about leap years is they are designed to compensate for the inadequacies of the Gregorian calendar against the actual progression of the solar year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the actual definition in the Gregorian calendar of a year is 365.2425 days, because the actual day it varies from year to year, but it's about 365 days, 5 hours, 49 minutes, and around 30 seconds, give or take a minute. Like it can swing that much. So, you know, every century year that should be a leap year is not, unless it's divisible by 400 a minute, is, but that still isn't good enough. So a very famous inventor and astronomer suggested a way to make sure that after millennia, the Gregorian calendar stayed in sync. So the question is two-part. Who is the famous inventor that had the year 4000 exception suggested, and why has this suggestion not been taken into the rule for calendars?
Oh, Man, that's a great question. And I can't do the Horshack impression this week. I do not have any idea. I love stuff about calendars and things too. So this is going to be really interesting. And of course, you know, the talk of calendars is good because of all the discussion this year of the Mayan calendar, which supposedly, you know, with all sorts of hoo-ha, they say is going to end the world this December 12th or 11th or somewhere around 21st. I don't know, somewhere in there. We're going to end the Mayan calendar, which means the end of the world, which is complete garbage, of course, even from an archaeological standpoint. Apparently, the Mayans never actually said anything remotely resembling that. But
yes, one very elementary interpretation of one of the Mayan long count calendars could be argued to run out of digits this year. That's about the extent of it.
Yes. And which in most situations would mean, oh, well, then we'd start our next calendar because the new era is starting as far as the Mayans. But anyway, we can't get down that road this week. Perhaps next week when we go over this, we'll have a little more time for that. I do want to bring Eric Martin in here, as I promised him, pretty close to on time. And but we will be thinking about this one and thinking about you. And again, jgarman.net for people that want to find more Jay. If you didn't get enough Jay here, which you probably didn't, you can find a lot more there at jgarman.net. You've been doing some stuff with SF Signal, really good stuff. So we love having you on, Jay, and I'll let you get back to moving books and collectibles.
All right. Thanks, buddy. You have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Jay. Take care. Bye. Jay Garman. jgarman.net. You can go check that out. Definitely worth your time. You know what? I'm going to hold off on our spots and promos and things because I do want to get a hold of Eric here right away. Eric Martin from Reddit.com. And actually, he's got an interesting backstory himself that I'm going to let him probably tell us a little bit about. But I could not be more excited to talk to him today. You guys have heard me on air just rant and lose it about SOPA and PIPA for quite some time. So now we're going to get somebody with some actual... good morning, Eric. Do we have you online?
Hey, good morning.
Oh, there he is. I was afraid maybe you dropped your phone. Eric Martin from Reddit.com. You are on Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM. Eric, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I was just telling people how excited I was to have you on. That I've been going off on my own and complaining and ranting about SOPA and PIPA. But it's exciting to have someone on who actually possibly knows something, as opposed to me, who's just coming from my own personal opinions. But before we dive into that, why don't you just tell us a quick burst about yourself and about Reddit? Because I know you're one of the co-founders of Reddit, and Reddit is, they're huge. It's a huge website.
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, I'm not a co-founder. I'm the general manager, and I've been with Reddit for about 5 years, about 3-4 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, I'm sorry. I had that information incorrect then on my sheet.
No worries. Yeah, Alexis Ohanian and Steve Huffman are the co-founders. Reddit is a social news community. It's sort of a community of communities. It's a site where people go on and they post links to news articles, to videos, images, or they may just post, a story or a question or some, a rant about something.
Mm-hmm.
And people vote these up and down, and they comment on them, and those get voted up and down. So every single thing on the site is user-generated. It's from our users, posting and discussing things. We don't have any editorial control over what's top on the homepage or.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a way for people to really discover things on the internet they might not otherwise be exposed to, because it doesn't have to go through your standard news channels or portal channels and things like that. It's truly a user and community driven information portal.
Exactly. And there's also, I think about a third to a half of the posts on the site are text. So people are posting just their thoughts on something or a question or, their theory on something. So it's it kind of started as a link aggregator, just going to, you know, news articles and videos, but has sort of evolved into a real sort of community and discussion platform.
Yep. And the problem with Reddit, here's my problem with Reddit. I get lost. I go there and all of a sudden 2 hours have gone by as I've flipped through all this stuff. And it's just, there's always something interesting that people have voted up, or there's always something that is intriguing that's in, you know, the news section as opposed to the most popular section. And I'm like, oh, people need to know about this and I'll vote those up. And, it's so easy to lose yourself in the amount of stuff that's coming through on that. It's just a really neat site. Been around for quite some time and has maintained popularity. One thing I find interesting about Reddit too is it's got somewhat of a similar aesthetic to like Craigslist. It's very, very scaled down, very easy on the eyes sort of look. Not a lot of flash and glamour.
Yeah, we've kept it nice and simple and haven't really changed it too much since it was started, 6 years ago. And we wanted as little distraction as possible. It's just about the content and the community and the discussion and everything else. Is a distraction. So we try to limit that.
So what happens? Let's talk 2 years from now. SOAP has been enacted, which we're all crossing our fingers that doesn't happen. But SOAP is enacted, and someone votes up on Reddit, a YouTube video or a song that they've recorded it's a cover of someone else's song that's under a record label that is not indie, that's actually part of the MPAA and so on. What type of things are going to happen to Reddit if that occurs?
Well, I mean, first of all, if SOPA passes 2 years from now, I will probably be out of this job, and I doubt Reddit will be able to exist.
Mm.
I don't think if SOPA passes, it's going to be shut down overnight or go out of business overnight. But 2 years, there's a good chance it could, and it's because of things like you mentioned, the YouTube clip, which YouTube itself has some of the same dangers. And that's that, we Reddit and they, YouTube, are user-generated sites.
Yep.
Reddit gets, 2 billion page views a month. We have a staff of about 12 people. YouTube is obviously a much bigger site and has a much bigger staff, but they're also in those same ratios. It's impossible to monitor every single thing that gets put up.
Yep.
For every possible violation. And the real problem with this SOPA and PIPA, the Senate version, is that there's no due process. Currently there's a law, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA. It's not great. I don't like it. It makes it difficult sometimes, and I think it has not really been that effective. But at least there's something called Safe Harbor, and there's sort of a due process, and there's mm-hmm. checks and balances. With SOPA, there's none of that. I mean, in every other area of U.S. law, getting prior restraint on speech is really difficult, and it takes a ruling by a judge. But under SOPA, the copyright owners and their team of lawyers and they have really extraordinary power. Not only to just take down one link or one video, which is what they have, which is what they can do under DMCA currently,
mm-hmm.
which again has its own problems, but under SOPA they can now take down the entire site.
Yeah. Now this is one thing that I'm curious about, and I don't know enough about the legislation to maybe know why this is the way that it is. But why is it possible to take down a whole site? Why is this not comparable to the precedent legal situations we've had in the past with like a Comcast, for example? Comcast yep. can't be held responsible for the liable. Anyways, for the speech that's processed over their wires, they can't be held responsible for legal infractions that occur just because you have a Comcast account. But in this situation, it sounds like they're turning that on its head and saying, you know what, we're not going to hold Comcast responsible, but Reddit, you know what, you acted as the wires basically for someone to infringe, so we are going to hold you directly responsible, regardless of the precedents that we've already set with the Comcasts and the other providers of internet.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, that's what you're referring to is, you know, kind of the common carrier provision that prevents utilities like telephone or cable or internet service providers from being liable for things that may, you know, that happen on their networks. This definitely does not fit in with that part of U.S. law. I mean, this not only holds sites that have user generated content like Reddit and YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, but it holds them liable and in jeopardy of having the whole site taken down without even any due process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no recourse. There's sort of this private right of action where, the copyright owners can make a claim and without any review by a judge, without any sort of adversarial argument and presentation of evidence and discovery in court, that, you know, the whole site can be shut down and it can be it can be cut off from ad networks, which, you know, if you're a
your revenue stream, really.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you know, the danger to the Facebooks and the YouTubes and Reddits and Twitters is huge. But also, you know, this also could affect the mom and pop t-shirt company in Wisconsin somewhere that puts their t-shirts or their handmade goods on Etsy and takes PayPal as payment and uses online advertising to kind of spread the word.
Yep.
You know, the PayPal account, the Google Ads, AdWords account that they're using to kind of do their marketing and advertising to their customers, those can be shut off without any due process, without, you know, them even being notified ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, and here in Illinois, we're very familiar with that process, unfortunately, because of the fairly recent Amazon fiasco, where Amazon basically cut off all of their, any sort of ads that were people were putting up on their blogs or on their websites. Personally, if you lived in Illinois, because of the fight against the internet taxations that Illinois wanted to put on to that process, they just pulled and said, "That's it. Then we're not going to have any more Illinois affiliates." And that happened to me, and it was painful. Fortunately, that's not my sole source of income, but the people that is their one of their primary sources of income. I mean, this is painful even to hear about or to think about that an individual out in the, you know, world, just in the community, could just say, "Hey, I don't like what that website is doing. I'm going to file something and say they're infringing," and then they're going to get cut down. And there's some reasons why that is not just possible, but actually likely, right? Because if the ad networks and the carriers don't pull some of that from the don't immediately respond to these types of requests, they could later be held liable for it if they haven't made I can't remember what the phrasing is, but if they haven't made appropriate action to try and remedy the situation right away.
Right. Not only that, but there's a sort of a vigilante provision in SOPA that says not only can they be held liable for not complying with the direction of copyright holders or the government in various cases within 5 days. And this includes search engines, ISPs, ad networks, payment networks. But if they act, if they block something, they can't be held liable for doing that incorrectly. So there's no there is no incentive for them to fight any of these or even question any of these requests, because they can be penalized if they don't do it, and there's provisions that prevent them from having any sort of liability or responsibility if they take down someone's PayPal account or ad account. And it turns out they were in the wrong. You know, if this person turns out innocent, there's no penalty for harming innocent users.
But there's a big penalty for not harming legal. Yeah, and
guess which side they're going to come down on.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Now we're painting this picture of these these evil oligarchs who are trying to take control of the internet, who are trying to take control of our speech and all this. But I know that although that may be true for a couple of individuals, not to name any names, but the vast majority, hopefully, of our lawmakers really have the interests of the people in heart and in mind. I mean, we hope this is true, anyways. Why is SOPA and PIPA? Why are these things happening? What is the driving force? What is the supposedly good reason and utilitarian reason for enacting legislation of this sort?
Sure. So, I mean, the proponents of SOPA, which is mostly the kind of content industry, so Hollywood, the music industry, some various sort of online, gaming or, other sort of digital goods that are sold online, they believe that their revenue is being harmed by, particularly foreign sites that basically, steal copyrighted work and then distribute it illegally. So piracy. I mean, SOPA is the Stop Online Piracy Act.
Yep.
There's also some, a smaller or at least a less vocal contingent that believes this will protect against, counterfeit drugs or gray market drugs, which is prescription drugs, which is a whole other issue. Also, there's some people that are, some luxury goods manufacturers or, I believe, some of the musical instrument manufacturers that are basically hoping this is a way to help stop, knockoff goods being sold on the internet. So knockoff, luxury handbags or knockoff expensive guitars.
But I mean, there's already a thriving counterfeit industry. I mean, you can't hear anything about China without hearing what percentage of their market is made up of counterfeit goods. And, you've got access to that and have, I mean, not since the internet, you've had access to counterfeit goods and knockoff Prada bags and, CDs being copied and passed around to friends and mixtapes and so on. I can't remember a time when that wasn't possible, since the advent probably of the cassette tape. Why is this considered different today? And why are they thinking this is going to actually hamstring their profits when it hasn't in the past?
I have some theories, but to be honest, I don't know. I mean, because I used to live in New York, and you walk down Canal Street and you can buy counterfeit DVDs of movies that are still in the theaters and handbags and all those sort of things. And this bill would be equivalent to saying, okay, we're just going to shut off all of Canal Street because some people on a blanket somewhere are selling DVDs of the latest Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
I think the internet's scary. It's scary to a lot of people, and the very cynical folks, which I'm not quite one of yet, would say that, part of the reason for SOPA and PIPA is because the internet, with things like WikiLeaks, is scary to the government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's scary to, lawmakers who now are losing control. But I think it's that losing control, it's from the content owners, at least with, the guy on Canal Street selling DVD, knockoff DVDs, there's at least what can be done if it comes up on the radar and you decide to take action against it and go through the courts, measures you can take. I think that the thing that frightens the content creators and is so frustrating, and I think, kind of the desire to have new legislation here is really out of frustration, is that, it's not quite, there's no clear action to take.
Yeah.
There's not a good enough, in the complicated international internet world, that there's not a lot of accessible remedies.
Yeah, I guess that's the other part that confuses me, though, too, is because, and we mentioned this a little bit earlier, is that a big part of the focus here is really on these foreign sites, and that's the examples that keep being brought up in the actual debates that happen, in the Senate. And but a lot of the impact doesn't seem to be restricted in any way to foreign sites. Reddit's not an overseas site, but you guys would be directly impacted by this. How are they balancing that? How is that being justified?
Well, the proponents of SOPA will say, you know, we're only targeting, you know, the worst, the quote, worst of the worst of these kind of foreign, you know, rogue sites that are beyond the reach of current laws. So that's why we need new ones. I mean, first of all, that claim would be a lot more credible if, you know, they didn't, you know, these industries didn't have a, you know, a long and ugly history of making really aggressive sort of dubious copyright claims that stifle innovation, that harm, you know, normal innocent Americans as sort of collateral damage. But
yep. But
they have tried to put in some sort of vague language that, you know, this is only for foreign sites, but it's not only for foreign companies. So YouTube, Reddit, are top level domains, and we have, you know, reddit.co.uk, reddit.de for Germany. So mm-hmm. So this, you know, this bill doesn't even pretend to exempt US companies from the, you know, from some of the provisions. It just says foreign sites. Now, there's a whole other section in the bills, kind of around anti-circumvention, or facilitation.
Yes.
So, you know, let's say there's some, you know, foreign site out there that's allowing the, you know, people to download pirated movies. Reddit or Facebook or Twitter could come under some of the provisions of SOPA merely for linking to one of those sites or even mentioning one of those sites. and again, we have, you know, 2 billion page views a month, and now we're supposed to, be responsible for every single thing and every single link going out to every single possible foreign rogue site. So. Yeah.
Well, this one hits home to me too. You know, as a sometime blogger and a consistent podcaster, a lot of times I'll put links up to sites because we mention them on the show, or because I need to talk about them one way or the other. And what it sounds like, and what I've read, and what you're saying here and confirming, is that if I put a site up, like, say, to, you know, thepiratebay.org, you know, for example, and that's determined to be one of those sites that they're going to come down on, just because I have mentioned that and have a link to it in my site, I too could feel the full wrath and fury of the of the legislative body.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, and there's a history of that, of, you know, the DMCA, which was, you know, intended to protect copyright holders, you know, has been, you know, there's many cases of it being used against journalists who are just discussing some of these technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Or investigating some of these, quote, anti-circumvention or, you know, circumvention technologies. So, you know, you could be in other journalists and podcasters and bloggers could be in danger just for discussing, you know, some of the technology behind the Pirate Bay.
Yeah. So we'll have to...
Other tech-
I was going to say, we'll have to cut this interview short then. I can't take the chance. I've got a question, though. Piracy, I think, you know, I think most of us would generally agree. I know there's some dissenters who would say, you know, piracy is actually a beneficial thing, that it actually produces an economy for the market that wouldn't exist otherwise. But I think in general, right, most people, you know, with a legalistic bent would say, you know what, piracy is a bad thing. We do want to stop it, or at least, slow it down if we can, and anyway, make it more difficult to do. One of the ways that comes up to manage this, though, has nothing to do with legalization and legislation, but has to do with how the companies themselves can kind of do that. And I know you and I talked briefly before the show about Steam as being kind of a model for that. Could you talk just a little bit about what Steam is and how that might be a better solution than this SOPA PIPA thing?
Yeah. So I mean. Steam is a great example of you know, and innovation being the solution to piracy. And Steam is a sort of online gaming platform where you can buy, you sort of have a digital locker for games, and you can buy games to play on your, you know, PC or Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, you know, indie games right next to, you know, really big titles, you know, the big sort of franchise, you know, console video games that we all know, right next to indie games. And, Steam is created by a company called Valve, and Gabe Newell at Valve has said that, you know, piracy is really a service issue. you know, if you can provide a better service than piracy, then you'll win, you know, then people will gladly pay for it. And he's proven that. And he's not only proven that in the U.S., where Steam, you know, does a pretty good business, especially among the Reddit community. But he's proven that in Russia, where there's, you know, there's even more rampant piracy.
Yes.
It's even easier to get copies of video games, you know, on the black market or online.
Well,
but if you innovate and make a good platform that's useful and, you know, experiment with different, you know, how technology can further the spread and further the user experience and improve, you know, playing online with friends and things like that, people will pay money for it.
Yep. Well, and also too, it starts to get to that the place that iTunes is getting to, that Google Music is getting to, where one of the benefits added is it reduces that friction that you have of trying to use your music. You know, one of the downsides of the DMCA, a huge one, was that you were not allowed to make a copy of your own DVD for backup. You had the one physical copy. Things like Steam and iTunes and so on are pushing us beyond that and saying, you know what, if you buy a copy of a song, you should be able to listen to that wherever you are and whatever equipment you happen to have in your hand at the moment. Do you think that's going to be a prevalent solution to our issues of copyright, adding that as a feature?
Well, I mean, I definitely think, you know, all these sort of cloud-powered things like Steam and sort of the other, you know, sort of digital lockers, or, you know, some of the streaming music options like RDO or Spotify are, you know, could be really great solutions. And you know, whether you believe their numbers or not, you know, Hollywood says that, you know, how much their industry has been hurt by piracy. And the music industry as well, and the music industry probably has a much, you know, more credible case. But, you know, people are enjoying these things more now than ever. You know, people are listening to music in more places. People are watching movies on Netflix on their computers while they're multitasking at work. They're doing it at home. They're doing it on their iPads and the airplane. So people are consuming more content. But the industry just has not invested in the innovation to, you know, turn those into revenue streams and business models. And they're still sort of stuck in this physical goods world.
Yep. Yep. Now, I know too that, you know, Reddit has, been kind of at the vanguard of a wave of, I don't know if you want to use the term protest, but at least a wave of information and getting the word out about SOPA and about PIPA and about, you know, what it is and what the impact, the real impact is going to be. You guys have done some things specifically with and I will call it a protest, the protest against GoDaddy, who was one of the supporters of SOPA, and with some of the other organizations and so on. Is there some good places that people can go to find out information about this and what they can do about this?
Sure. So, I mean, on Reddit, what the way Reddit works is we have different subreddits on topics. Could be a sports team, could be about guns, could be about zombies, could be about atheism, you name it. But we created there was a subreddit created called SOPA, where people are again submitting and discussing and upvoting all kinds of various news things, you know, proposals for what to do about this, links to resources online. So SOPA.reddit would be a great place to start, and then kind of, you know, surf the web from there and learn more about this, about these bills.
Excellent, excellent. SOPA.reddit.com is a great place to find more information. And not only that, but it's what's great too is it's not stuff that Eric said, I want you guys to read about. This is stuff that the community has said, hey, this is interesting. This is about SOPA. This is something you should know as a group of people. And it's, you know, one of those venues that's actually in danger is that freedom of speech and that ability to share and spread information in this manner is possibly coming under attack by SOPA and PIPA. One interesting article I read just recently too talked about how this is kind of giving a kick in the pants to a lot of the tech literati in Silicon Valley, that they have to come off of their ivory tower and actually come down into the grassroots and fight and battle against some of this legislation that's occurring all the way over on the East Coast in D.C. And that I believe can be nothing but a good thing, is making people aware and informed and active about the things that are occurring in their community and in their country.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we decided to do, and I think, you know, in hindsight, I'm really glad we did, is we, you know, put a link, you know, we do something we never do, which is, you know, put our a link on the sidebar of our homepage, and this one went to the live hearings. So we said, let's see if we can get a bunch of Redditors to actually watch the in this case, it was the Judicial Committee hearings on SOPA. Let's just watch these, you know, our elected representatives discuss this thing. And it was, you know, it was disgusting. I mean, the you know, people were just so, like, gleefully ignorant of the technology that they were about to legislate.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, and also the other thing that was really interesting and I think eye-opening for a lot of the Reddit audience, which, you know, in general tends to be more more Occupy Wall Street than Tea Party, was that they saw that, you know, this is not a partisan issue. Mm-hmm. There are people supporting SOPA on both sides, and, you know, 50-50, and there's people, you know, opposing SOPA on both sides 50-50. So it is more of a interest issue than a partisan issue.
I would say it's more of an ignorance issue than a partisan issue, but interest is a kinder way to put it. Absolutely. So, Eric, I apologize. I've got to bring us to a close. We're right up against the wall here time-wise, and I knew this was going to happen because there's so much to talk about on this and so many things that we could get into. We didn't even scratch the surface of your background in history with copyright and working with the music industry. This entire interview will be up and available on our website for podcasting, and I'll thumbs up it a few times on Reddit as well. So hopefully we'll get some traction there. But Eric Martin from Reddit, I want to say thank you so much for your time and expertise. This has been fantastic.
Absolutely, thanks, Michael. And, you know, thanks for helping to make sure people are aware of, you know, what Congress is. You know, meddling with.
Absolutely. Glad to do it. No question. Thank you again. And Eric, have a great weekend. We'll hopefully be talking to you again soon.
You too. Thanks.
Take care. Eric Martin from Reddit.com. Don't forget that website, SOPA.reddit.com, if you want to find out more information about what's happening in our Congress and what kind of goofiness they're getting up to and things they're trying to change. Right now, I believe it or not, I am going to play a couple of spots. When we come back, we're not going to have time for the cool sites of the week. I told you I wasn't going to promise that, but I will throw on the podcast-only song of the week. And the podcast-only song of the week. I love this song. This is great. It's by David Byrne. Haven't heard a lot from him lately, but I love this song. It's called She Only Sleeps. It's off of the album Grown Backwards. But right now, you're going to be listening to some spots. Thank you so much for listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Make sure and come back and listen to us next week, too. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/tech. Tech Talk WRLR.
You're listening to 98.3 FM WRLR LP Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
She might dance all night topless bar, fool around, go too far, but I don't mind. You see, things are not what they appear, 'cause she only sleeps with me. She might drink a bit, crash the car, but come out okay. My friends might laugh, but they only know what they can see, and she only sleeps with me. Nights on Times Square, live and on stage, live. flies from tree to tree to the highest branch where she thinks she's free. She can have it all. That's the reason you wouldn't believe that she only sleeps with me. Well, there's a porno book in the library, and nothing ever goes where it shouldn't be. And the world is queer, and the human is strangest of all, and she's